Religious liberty is an issue I think that we as Christians need to get out in front of.
Mark Hemingway talking about his joint presentation at the 2017 Fall Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
Whether it's willful or simple ignorance, the media have badly misrepresented this issue. It is also vital that all Americans understand just how foundational religious liberty and freedom of conscience are to the preservation of all American freedoms. And this is something that even those Americans who aren't religious should understand and agree with. I also happen to believe that we as Lutherans, with our understanding of Two Kingdoms theology, are in an excellent position to be the explainers and ambassadors of this issue.
You can meet and hear Mark and Molly Hemingway making the case for religious liberty at the Fall Making the Case Conference, Friday, November 10th and Saturday, November 11th in Houston, Texas. Registration is $120. Child care is free. Find out more and register at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. It's been about 2 years since the rise of the protests, in some cases violence, often just kind of the nastiest kind of reaction on the part of students who, well, maybe I sound like an old man, but they should be studying. They should be in the library reading books. They should be studying for that test Go out and have fun if you're a college student. If you have the time and you got your homework done, go out and have fun instead of carrying signs around threatening the university teachers, trying to get people fired. But it happened at Mizzou, at the University of Missouri, and it made national news, and it tended to kind of kick off a trend that had probably been working under the surface. What has been the result of the progressivism on campus among the students at the University of Missouri and other campuses? Joining us to answer that question, Joy Pullman, mother of four children, managing editor of The Federalist, and author of the book The Education Invasion, How Common Core Fights Parents for Control of American Kids, and a recent column titled Student Riots Slashed Mizzou Enrollment 35% in 2 years. Watch for more. Joy, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Hi, thank you.
Should the University of Missouri serve as a warning to other college campuses and their administrations who are considering following the same path when it comes to progressivism among their students on campus?
I think the short answer to that is yes, and in fact, it's for two reasons. Of course, the first one is that it's very clear by now that the public, as well as particularly parents who are about to send their kids off to college, are really not, they're just not going to put up with having their kids put on a campus where administrators let kids, you know, run around, scream epithets at each other, demand muscle, you know, refuse to let people go onto public spaces because they're having racial healing sessions, just basically have slightly tame riots, you know, rampaging around campus, demanding that the administration, the president, leave the campus. They're demanding that they have race-based quotas for hiring and for staff and for faculty and programs. Parents look at all of that and they say, this is a zoo. What is my kid going to learn going here? And so the University of Missouri is really kind of, I think, it was the first one to kind of set off what we've seen over the past 2 years, a conflagration of, you know, on university campuses across the country of similar events happening. And so I think parents don't want their kids in that kind of a hostile environment. It's very clearly not a learning, an academic, a growth environment for a young person. And I think the second reason, our harbinger of what may be to come, is that we have actually seen between 2010 and 2015, federal statistics are showing that there's actually been a decline in the percentage of young people going to college. And that really was not expected because the millennials, you know, that it's a big generation and they all, you know, we've had programs for decades trying to boost college enrollment because it's kind of like, you know, the new entitlement in our society. And so I think just anecdotally, I'm talking to many, many more parents who are saying, I'm not really 100% sure that we're even really going to do college. Maybe there's another route for my kid to get into a stable way of providing for himself.
So just review for us what happened at Mizzou and what have been the results in the last 2 years or so.
So what basically happened in 2015, in the fall of 2015, you had a bunch of students come out and demand, And what happened was that the president of the campus, the university campus is close to Ferguson, Missouri, where we saw race riots also happen over police shooting kids of color. It happened in Florida, then it happened in kind of the outskirts of St. Louis there. And then so the students, you know, activism kind of team called Black Lives Matter began moving onto campuses and establishing these groups of students who basically had demands. They saw the fact that there are fewer kids of color getting into college, or there's fewer professors of color on college campuses. They saw that as proof that their institutions are racist. And so they basically decided that they were going to hold tantrums until colleges basically redistributed more resources according to race on their campuses. So that really started first at Mizzou. And again, it spread. I don't know if your listeners are familiar with the demands.org to 880 college campuses had similar movements where, you know, protesters marched up to the administration, gave them this list of demands, and basically said, if you don't comply with this by, a couple of days, a week from now, you know, then we're basically going to start trashing the place. And that did proceed to happen on a number of campuses. And then, I mean, there was also just kind of some crazy, I'm trying to think about how to talk. Somebody drew a swastika with human feces on a wall in a student dorm bathroom. And that, of course, became a really big deal. And students were running around accusing all kinds of, you know, things about people. It turned out ultimately to seem that it was an anti-Semitic incident. It was committed by a student who had grudges against Jewish people. So it was just basically kind of a zoo. And it was a zoo of the kind that I think is unique to American academia, which is to say, all the isms, you know, focusing on people as categories rather than individuals and assigning them virtue just according to their skin color, for Pete's sake, rather than, as Martin Luther King talks about, you know, the content of their character.
And the results at Mizzou, at least, have been both in terms of enrollment and economics pretty severe, haven't they?
Oh, very, very severe. You know, so, I mean, Mizzou is a university of, right now, 35,000 kids go to that school. And so a 35% cut in enrollment over 2 years, you know, I mean, that's a third of the campus, you know, leaving. That's huge. And, I mean, of course, nowadays, most students are bringing with them money from the federal government. And so if those students don't go there, of course, you know, the tuition money doesn't go there. The scholarship money doesn't even flow from their friends and from the state. So the campus, you know, has been slashing faculty positions, not filling open faculty positions. They have 7 empty dorm buildings that they have been trying to convert into kind of hostels, kind of hotels, you know, for people to stay in, you know, parents, alumni, that people, folks there for sports games and things. They're basically doing, you know, whatever they can, because this is a serious financial problem for them to not have a third of their student population.
This is just an isolated, or might be viewed as an isolated incident, and yet there are many other campuses where it's gone even beyond what happened at Mizzou, maybe not in terms of its notoriety, but certainly in terms of what the students were willing to pull. I'm thinking of Middleton, and I'm thinking about Evergreen State as well. What's going on, and what's driving this? What's behind this?
Well, I think that the short answer really is that young people, again, nowadays they are taught that just by the fact that they are a woman, that they are a person with a certain skin color, you know, that they have been oppressed and victimized by other people, whether there is any objective evidence for this. And if you have a secular worldview, you have no opportunity to offer forgiveness, redemption, repentance. You know, no, there's no way of coming clean and moving forward over you and I are Christians. We, you know, God made all people, and it is wrong to treat them badly because they look different from you, right? You know, but under our, you know, framework of understanding the world, there's a way to repent and have forgiveness and healing and to move on. But if you don't have that sort of a mental framework, and it doesn't exist in the kind of the Marxist class warfare that's going on in college campuses, then what you basically have is endless social warfare. And I mean, we're just seeing the students act this out, and they're not acting it out in a vacuum. It's not inherent in human nature to look at other people and say, you know, I don't have what you have. Give it to, well, I guess maybe it is because it's sin nature. But, you know, it's not inherent in human nature that we would be worrying like this all the time. And it certainly isn't something that we have seen, within America, really, to this extent. So young people are doing this because they have been taught that this is the truth about the world, that it's a zero-sum game where you have to fight and that your oppression and therefore your social worth and your virtue is determined by things that you can't change. The genitals you have, you know, the DNA that you have, the way that you dress, or, you know, your skin color. And so this is a really reductionist worldview that basically traps people. And they, you know, in their frustration of not having any way to resolve this tension, this pain and this anger, they're acting out on college campuses. And again, they've been taught to do this. It's really hard for academia to know how to respond, which is, I think, why we see them being so unstable and unsure, because really the left believes in that sort of class warfare, that kind of Marxism, that, you know, the group consciousness. And so they don't have the resources to come to students and say, what you've been taught is wrong. You know, you are not a bad person because you have white skin necessarily. You're not, you know, a bad person because you're a man necessarily. There are other systems by which we can, you know, mark virtue and bad character. And there are ways that we can, you know, come together as human beings made in God's image. That's those resources for saying that and to help young people come to terms with those sorts of things and unify as Americans are really not available on college campuses right now.
How would you explain the readiness to turn to violent solutions when it comes to this kind of progressivism among America's college students?
Well, my husband studied philosophy in graduate school, and I actually have a really hard time understanding this because I am not really a physically aggressive person. It is inherent to postmodern philosophy. Basically, if there is no truth, you know, if there is nothing that is outside of us that is binding on all of us, that is truly just and truly true, then each of us becomes basically a little God. We are the determiner of what is right and true and what will happen. So what that turns into is a dog-eat-dog kind of Darwinist world, right? The people who are the strongest, who scream the loudest, who punch the first and farthest, those are the ones who are going to win. And also among the left, they have this kind of non-religious word faith idea of the world, where the more people believe and say a certain idea, the more its truth factor increases. So that's why we see them wanting to repress speech that they disagree with, because they believe that, you know, there is no objective truth. It really becomes more truthy by the number of people saying and believing it. So therefore, you know, if they think that, oh, I'm just saying, you know, all people are equal no matter what they look like, to them that's racist speech. So the only if you're not willing to work out your problems with words and to tolerate people who disagree with you, which has been kind of the Western liberal tradition we've built up over thousands of years to avoid religious wars and political wars, if you don't believe those kind of basic underpinnings of a free Western society, then what you have, I mean, if you can't solve your problems with words, then your next recourse is fists or weapons. And so I think that's really why we're seeing, I mean, it's edging that way on college campuses, but it is edging that way, and that's scary.
The scary part is that these students don't remain students. Three in five, will graduate. We want to talk about that in just a minute. 3 in 5 of them will graduate, and when they do, I seriously doubt that they will leave these beliefs, these deeply held and wrong-headed philosophies, behind on campus. What are your thoughts there?
Let's be fair. The people who are loud and out on the quad screaming at people and shoving each other around, they're a very small minority. You know, a lot of the professors, a lot of the students, whether they are left or right politically, they don't agree with this sort of behavior. But we don't in our society have the courage to stand up and assert a truth like that, you know, against people who disagree, right? So the silent majority are cowards. So, everyone isn't a true believer in this philosophical mess that we see playing itself out on our campuses, but it's definitely in the air that we breathe, and it's definitely thicker on college campuses. And so you're right, you know, when these young people graduate, if they graduate, because as you mentioned, you know, 40% of kids who go to college do not graduate with a degree. But, though, I mean, even if, you know, the time that they spend in college, they're learning these ideas and they're picking up this atmosphere. Now, some of them are becoming what we call now the alt-right. They see this happening and they really dislike it. They find it repressive. They find it unfair, and it is repressive and unfair. And they overreact, you know, and they kind of go really strong into the opposite way, into kind of white identity politics, nationalism. But, you know, and then, of course, some of them go in and they become seduced by these ideas, and they, you know, again, they become what we call social justice warriors, people who think that your worth in life is determined by kind of this constellation of isms. whether you're a transgender person, whether you have extra melanin content in your skin, whatever. And so, you know, these folks, they vote, they're going to have kids, they're going to go into, they're going to be, you know, managers, business leaders, they're going to be social leaders, they're going to be volunteers. And, you know, what people learn on college campuses, they're going to take with them, you know, into the rest of their lives. And especially when we live in a society where our fellow Americans help us self-govern, we come, you know, together to decide on public issues, my rights, your rights, our listeners' rights are going to be determined by these people based on, in large part, what they are learning in these institutions.
What I want to know is, when it comes down to concrete matters, what are they protesting? I think back to the protests of the civil rights era and of the Vietnam era. Obviously, we need to distinguish those two, although they overlap to a great degree. There were real, demonstrable wrongs. There were laws that needed to
Absolutely.
Be overturned and written in, with respect to civil rights. And there were masses of young people who were being drafted and sent to Vietnam, a war that, well, eventually no one finally believed in. Right or wrong, those were actual things to protest. What are these kids protesting?
Well, to be honest, we don't have a lot of specific data on this, so I'm just going to kind of give you my hunch. But I actually personally place a lot of the sort of angst and the turmoil that young people have on two things. They are the lack of core institutions in our social life and American life that give people transcendent meaning and stability and an understanding of how to bring order out of chaos. Those two things are religion and family. You know, today's young people are growing up in a time where not only do fewer people go to church or have other, you know, expressions of commitment to their faith, there's a dramatic increase, especially among young people, of just no faith, being agnostic or atheist. So, I mean, we have that going on partly because of this postmodernism that deconstructs religion, that tells them it's false, it's wrong, it's lying to them, it's repressing them, and so forth. It sounds like liberation to them, but what it really does is gives them a sense of meaningless and no way to mediate between, again, you know, they look at a wrong that happens, they see someone driving by on their campus and shouting a racial slur at a fellow student. That is wrong, you know. And so our religion, again, gives you a way to understand, to cope with, to deal with the process wrongs. And so when you don't have that, you lose those psychological resources for healing what is a genuine injustice. And it's the same thing in family life. Half, if not more, of American kids nowadays are growing up in homes where mom and dad, their own mom and dad, are not together. They were either never together, because 40% of kids are born into homes with no married parents, or over time, you know, those parents decided to break their family up. And we know, I mean, objectively, from mounds and mounds of social science research, that is bad for the children. It hurts their psyches. It makes it difficult for them to cope with stresses in their life. You know, that is a major destabilizer in a young, even in an adult's life. If your parents divorce, you know, when you're an adult, it's still destabilizing. It still hurts you. So we have all these young people who do have real grievances, who have, you know, have also been unjustly treated by their parents and also by a society that tells them, you shouldn't feel this way about this condition of your family life, because that, you know, contradicts, you know, our ethos of everyone should be able to do whatever he wants and it doesn't really hurt anybody else. It also requires them to basically place blame on their own parents, which is a very difficult thing for a decent young person to do, even if parents sometimes don't feel that way. So I actually do think that young people have legitimate reasons for feeling wounded, and they have, you know, legitimate, you know, the world is full of injustice, it's full of sin, you know, and so you look at that, and if you do not have, you haven't learned how to deal with that growing up, you don't have your mom and dad there having a stable home environment for you, giving you, you know, their own stability, passing that on to you, teaching you how to become a, you know, grown-up human being, you know, because they're not being mature people who handle their problems by actually solving them rather than just trying to dissolve, you know, their relationship. You know, you've been cheated. And so we have all these kids today who really have been cheated by our society, and they don't know it, and they feel that deeply inside them, and they can't really name it. And so I think they latch on to these social justice causes as a way to kind of validate and make them feel good, and it's kind of like they're drugging themselves. They're just reaching out because they feel lost, they feel adrift, and this is something they can belong to and believe in.
Finally, with about 30 seconds, your kids are small. But if you were the parent of a high school senior or junior today, Joy, would you seriously consider not sending your kid to a state university where this kind of stuff is commonplace?
Absolutely. I mean, I think people need to look at, there's really a variety of ways to get people into, you know, again, a family-sustaining career. So for, I don't have older kids, but I do have college-age siblings. And for example, my brother is working for a landscaper where after 3 years, you know, he can have a technical degree and a license plus experience to start his own landscaping company where starting pay is between $50,000 and $60,000 a year. As, you know, 22, 23-year-old guy at that point, that would be amazing. You know, he could ride that pony for the rest of his life and support a family on that. So, and that's just one example of the many, many opportunities available to young people that don't require them to go get indoctrinated at a state university and come out again with typically even, you know, no better or often even worse mental skills than they have when they went in. That would be a debt-free pursuit. So win-win-win, right?
Joy Pullman is a mother of four children, managing editor of The Federalist, author of the book The Education Invasion, How Common Core Fights Parents for Control of America's Kids, and a recent column titled Student Riots Slashed Mizzou Enrollment 35% in 2 Years. Watch for more. You can read it at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Joy, thank you very much.
Thank you.
When we come back, it's Pastor Tom Baker of Law and Gospel. We'll be teaching our weekly Sunday school lesson with him. We'll be in Genesis chapter 24, the story of Isaac and Rebekah. We'll be right back. Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. St. Mark Lutheran, Edmond, Oklahoma. Emmanuel Lutheran, Manchester, New Hampshire. University Lutheran Chapel, Minneapolis, Minnesota. Prince of Peace Lutheran, Freedom, Pennsylvania. Holy Cross Lutheran, O'Fallon, Missouri. St. Paul Lutheran, Indianapolis, Indiana. Christ Lutheran, Rochester, Minnesota. Holy Cross Lutheran, Carlisle, Iowa. St. Peter's Lutheran, Indianapolis, Indiana. And Grace Lutheran, Wellsville, Missouri. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll publicize your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org, click support, the Issues Etc. 300.
The Church's Music from the 20th Century. The 17th century. Jesus has come and brings pleasure eternal. The 11th century. The 8th century. The 4th century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Education and edification. You're listening to Issues Etc.
An average of 20 military veterans kill themselves every day. Project Operation Barnabas is a network of LCMS congregations who reach out to veterans and their congregations and their communities with the gospel of Jesus Christ. Operation Barnabas is a program of LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. Find out more at lcms.org/armed forces. Serving those who serve. LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. lcms.org/armed forces.
Are you a homeschool parent looking for help teaching certain subjects? Or do you want your student to study the history, languages, and literature of Western civilization? Memoria Press Online Academy has live online classes with master teachers to help you. Their teachers have years of experience teaching, delighting, and moving students literally from all around the world. Your homeschool year doesn't have to be difficult. Visit MemoriaPressAcademy.com or call 877-745-8866.